This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Oppen Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We'll take command for you a little later this hour. So some commanders. We got some of Kevin Willard's chat with Kevin Sheehan later on in the show. So we have a whole bunch of stuff. But our top story today, oh, man. For the second straight day, it is a thrilling Maryland win, this time by the ladies, and it's time to talk about it with one of the Terps' very best ever.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Christy Winter Scott is with us, of course, the Maryland legend, women's hoops analyst for a variety of networks. Of course, she's also the Mystics color analyst. You also see her on Wizards coverage. Basically, she's a basketball savant. Christy, hello, ma'am. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you. How are you?
I am good. What a day to be someone who talks about Maryland.
How about that?
Look, we don't do a ton of college basketball on this show. We major in pro basketball and certainly the NFL. But with what Maryland has done the last 2 days, I know how much it means to so many folks around here. For you especially, watching yesterday, like it's fun and all to watch the men's team and what they did over the weekend. So you have that high going into the game, and then you get to see your alma mater, your program, Coach Freeze, do that. That 17-point comeback. Just take me through your emotions and what you're thinking watching this unfold yesterday.
Are you sure you want all of that? Because you know how wiggly I can get, especially in games like that. But, wow, listen, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts on that. But with Brenda Freeze and how she is able to build the mentality in each of her players, whether they get on the court or not. But they are resilient. They are so tough-minded that even 17 down in the third quarter, there was no quit. There was no letdown. There was no give-in. It was a push-through. It was, we can still do this. There's time on the clock. And that's how every single player played the game, not just throughout regulation, obviously, but in the two overtime sessions. I mean, it was a commitment to grit, and that's what, you know, it's one of my favorite quotes, commit to grit, and that's exactly what they did on the court. And, you know, I was watching her. I know the game was unfolding, but I believe it was Poffenbarger on the free throw line. No, it was Kubik at the free throw line towards the end, and I think she missed the first one.
Yep.
And they had a shot of Brenda, and she said out loud, "See it in." Like, that's what it looked like, she said. And then while she was in her shot, like getting the dribbles, getting ready to take that next free throw, I was watching Brenda and she was clapping. And I think she knew that that next one was going in. And so that's just, for me, a microcosm of the belief that she has in how she's leading the team, but also the belief in how she has prepared them and they've trusted in that preparedness and executed regardless of the situations of adversity, you know, with Bree McDaniel going down earlier in the season, all the things, you know, Cheyenne Sellers going down, you know, a couple times throughout the season, but still remaining in games and remaining impactful. And she just was magnificent as her senior shy self has been all season long. So I think it's just it was the resilience for me, But, you know, the ebbs and flows of the March Madness of it all, especially in the overtime sessions.
Oh, yeah.
I was unnerved about five times in 5 seconds. But, they found a way to dig it out. And for that, I mean, it's inspiring basketball-wise. But I think, you know, for me, it's always going to be, you know, the character is displayed in moments like that. And, you know, the life lessons that all of them will learn from grinding through the game like that is going to be something special as the years unfold in front of them. But I think if you're watching it just in general, I think the fight that they displayed was inspiring for life reasons also. So
yeah, no, for sure. And so as like you obviously coached for a long time and you got the player background, you sat in these games as a neutral analyst trying to have to keep your head through amidst the chaos. You've called March Madness for ESPN for a long time. So when you're watching because lots of March Madness games are up and down. They're high strung. Your season's on the line. But this game was particularly turbulent. That last possession of regulation where Maryland gets the tie, like that is not how Brenda Freeze drew that up. So you have that chaos that works out for you. Then in the overtime, you have one of your best free throw shooters miss a free throw and then foul their best player as basically time expires to send that thing to double overtime. How do you think Brenda was talking to her team in those moments through the turbulence to make sure that they could ultimately come out on top?
Well, I'm sure she wasn't saying what I was saying when all this was happening. Because, listen, I was having a time. But, you know, we were removed from it. But at the same time, I was like, oh, my God, what is happening right now? But I think, you know, she had to have said something to keep them composed because that's how they played, right? And I think that's what the best coaches do in those moments of chaos, right? She knows that it's chaotic, it's up and down, like what just happened, and you can't fix what has already transpired, right? The only thing you can fix or try to execute is what's in front of you, another life lesson right there for everyone. But I just think it had to have been, hey, you know, we already know that wasn't a great choice right there to do that on the three, fouling the three-point shooter and getting in the air on that. But, hey, we're not going to sit there and waste half the time out talking about how wrong that was. We understand that. We're moving on. Like, that's a look at the player and say, kind of lean your head to the side like you know better. And maybe not even say that, but, like, non-verbally say that to save all the time that you need to prepare for the next thing. So I think it's, you know, you got to have amnesia for those things that happen behind you. We're not going to sit on that and begrudge the situation that was negative, that kind of hampered us right there for sure. But what are we going to do next? Like, how are we going to win? And I think that is the verbiage that each of the players on the court and everyone else on the bench absorbed and embraced in that moment. And that's why they were able to come out and win, because there was a plan in place for the next play. And I think that's what you saw there from Brenda Freeze and the team.
Christy Winter Scott's with us, of course, basketball analyst for Monumental Sports, amongst others. She also, of course, had a very successful and storied career at Maryland herself. And we're talking about the Terps' victory yesterday. The end of that game, obviously, they're able to get the nice defensive stop. You get the moment to celebrate. Hoorah. You get all the hoopla afterwards. It's great because it's at Xfinity Center. And all of a sudden, you look up and you go, oh, right, we have to play South Carolina on Friday. How do you begin to wrap your head around that task and the high? I mean, first, before we get to we can get into the specifics of South Carolina in a second, Christy.
Yeah.
Much more generally, in the NCAA tournament, how do you try to wrap your head around, we should celebrate these wins, they're big, important moments, but then eventually there is more to do just a couple of days later?
Oh, no, you have to celebrate those moments, right? And I think that's why, you know, I keep saying life lessons, but I swear, it's exactly why I love sports, especially basketball, because, you know, if you don't celebrate those moments, who knows if you'll get another one. And I'm not saying that in a negative way about the next game or the next game after that or the next two after that. I just think that you have to be where your feet are in terms of everything that you're doing, right? And it's not get right to the next thing, which I'm sure they got right to film after they had the celebration in the locker room, right? But there's no way you're going to have that kind of win and say, good job, okay, Friday we have this. And, like, in the next breath. Like, that just cannot, that's not healthy, number one. Like, you have to celebrate what you just did. You ran through the tape, you hear me? So you have to let that marinate with how you did it, not necessarily that it happened, but how you did that, right? And celebrate the fact that you did all of what you needed to do. Every player stepped up. Every player contributed, whether it was statistical or emotional. Everybody did that. And that's how you lead into the next game with that kind of energy and force. And it's always going to be the approach for me mentally to any game, but especially in March Madness, that you have to go in with. So you got to celebrate it. You can't brush it under the rug or whatever and saying like, yeah, that was all right, but now we have the next thing, you know, 5 minutes later. No, I hope they celebrated that night, and I hope they dropped their shoulders out of their ears and, you know, just understood exactly what it took to do that, because they're going to need to bottle that up and pour it out several more times ahead. So for me, I'm always a proponent of, you know, celebrate the moment, be there where you are with your teammates that you fought hard with your coaching staff that you prepared and saw the game plan and the blueprint be executed like that, right? And even though there were broken plays and the ebbs and flows of it all, I think it's fair to say that, you know, everyone in the locker room that from the video I saw, you know, was really enjoying the fact of how they won, not necessarily that they won. But for me, it's always going to be that, you know, have your moment and bask in that glow for a moment, and then carry that same great energy moving forward.
Christy Winterscott with us here on the Hoffman Show. So then we get to eventually the party's over. You get back to work and South Carolina's ahead. It's the most talented roster in the sport. Dawn's one of the best coaches in the sport. They are the defending champions for a reason. How do you go? There is a blueprint to beat them. Connecticut did it. This is not an undefeated South Carolina team like last year. What has to happen for Maryland to keep this thing close and give themselves a chance against the defending champs?
You know what? That's such a great question, and I know a lot of teams this year have not found the answer for that. But the teams who have found an answer for that, they've put a lot of pressure on the rim. I think they've really tried to use the aggressive style of defense up the line that Dawn likes to present defensively, try to use that against them and get some backdoor kind of Princeton-y kind of offense set against them and spread them out a little bit. But, you know, obviously they've made adjustments to how they didn't win a couple of games this year. So we'll see if those adjustments hold true. But I think the biggest issue or hurdle I see in this game for Maryland is not necessarily tactical. Okay. I think it's more so based on the fact that South Carolina, they have depth. And with that depth, they come in waves at you. I mean, they have Malaysia Fawali off the bench. Like, she's like, she would start anywhere else, you know. And I think, you know, they have Joyce also on the inside who comes off the bench for them, you know. And she's a freshman, but she plays big minutes. And those two players in particular for me are the ones that I circle as being like the major issues. And in terms of not having Bree McDaniel like right now, I think that impacts obviously your rotation, but Maryland has been able to adjust because that happened in January, I guess, around that time where they had those four games and all that in a row of top 10 teams that they had to face, including Texas, who was also a number one seed in the tournament this year. So I think when you look at how Maryland has been able to grind and grit out these wins down the stretch of this regular season and also obviously yesterday's game, they've got to tap into that mentality. I mean, it's got to be, you know, what Cheyenne Sellers said post-game. She said, I didn't want it to be my last game, right? And I kind of saw that in her when she contested that shot in regulation that didn't go in. But if you look at that replay and look at Shai Sellers, she covered her face like, oh, my God, thank God it didn't go in. That's what it looked like to me. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I felt I just got chills on my arm just remembering what that looked like for me, right? So the fact that she said that after the game, I think there's going to be obviously a sense of hunger, a sense of focus, right? And I think the ebbs and flows down the stretch, like those fouls that didn't need to occur, right? You know, the discipline and, you know, all the things that they need, I think they're going to need to tap into that. And I heard Brenda Freeze a couple of games ago at halftime say, you know, we're not even close. I think it was against Norfolk State in the halftime locker room. She was like, you're not even close to playing how you're capable of playing. So I think since then, they've turned the page to understanding that. And then, you know, you're going to have, they're human, you're going to have ebbs and flows with discipline situation, but you got to be locked in, you got to be focused. Obviously, the margin of error continues to shrink as you move forward in this Sweet 16 space. So they got to be disciplined. They've got to stay on the glass, but they have to be ready for the waves of rotational players that Dawn Staley is going to put on the court. And I think that is going to be the biggest test for Maryland. You know, there may be, you know, some timeouts that aren't based on using the whiteboard. It may be based on we're going to be pressing. We're not going deep into our bench. Everyone's got to be fresh. So this timeout is just to get recharged, and we're going right back out there. So I think that's something that I'm going to be looking for. But, you know, I love Dawn. I love Brenda. And I think it's going to be a chess match in terms of the X's and O's. But I think it's going to come down to the will and the grit. And, you know, the resilience that Maryland has tapped into under the adversity of having Bree McDaniel being out and et cetera. But I think they found a way to win, that they celebrated yesterday, and they got to carry that wave of force right into Friday's game against a really tough South Carolina team.
Christy Winterscott with us here on the Hoffman Show. And again, if you want more on the Maryland game, we talked about it off the top of the show. Brenda Freeze was on with Kevin Sheehan earlier today. Check that out. Christy, I'd be remiss, though, if I didn't touch on the other story. I wish we didn't have to, because the other story out of the women's game last night is just, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. It's brutal. I don't know all of the words I want to say to capture the depth of sadness here of what we saw where Juju Watkins goes down last night. I don't know whether you're watching live or you, like me, found out this morning when you woke up, but like, how big of a loss of is this for the sport and for what we were hoping to see from her the rest of the tournament, and especially the seeming collision course that USC and UConn were on, where we were going to get, for the third straight year, how lucky for us that the two biggest stars in the sport we're going to face off.
Yeah.
Angel and Caitlin the last couple of years, and then Paige and Juju this year. But what was your reaction, I guess, is the easiest way to ask it, as if that's easy, but the easiest way to ask the question of when you saw the news.
Right. I'm going to, you know, try my best not to get emotional, but too late.
I
am just, I'm brokenhearted for her. You know, the sweetest kid and the most fierce competitor I've seen in a long time. I mean, she's only a sophomore, but, you know, we were on the Wizards postgame show last night and literally walked off the set, and one of the cameramen said, they just carried Juju off the floor. And I was like, no way. Because I just said, I'm going to go home and get the second half of the USC game, right? And like the last segment right before we went on air, I was like, you know, talking about that. And you know, for that to happen the way that it happened in the first 4 minutes of the game, I've been depressed all day, to be honest, every time I think about it. And then on social media, it's like, I don't know if I can see that picture of her again, you know, on the ground, like grimacing. My daughter got hurt last year. She's a senior at Georgetown and got injured in the Big East tournament semifinals last year with an ACL. So for me, it's like I feel it on a lot of different levels. Like, you know, I'm worried about how our parents feel, you know, because you feel so helpless. So for me, you know, outside looking in, I feel like I'm inside looking out because of how that happened and what that feels like, you know, emotionally as a parent, where you can't help at all like you want to, and you can't take the pain away from your kid. And I think that's how I saw it first. But then overarching, I hate it for the game, for right now, the trajectory and, you know, just the love that Juju has garnered over her really short collegiate career so far, and not be able to make it through to the end of this season. And like you said, you know, the crescendo of possibly meeting up, obviously, with UConn, and, you know, her teammates, you know, had to play the rest of the game. I mean, there's so many emotional dynamics of that all. Lindsey Gottlieb, I listened to her post-game presser, and she said, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't have to compartmentalize emotionally as a human being what just happened to Juju, right? And, you know, just thinking of that, too, having to stay locked in and captain your team during that emotional just earthquake, and how you just have to manage everyone in that moment. I don't know how that happened for her, how she was able to just navigate emotionally and stay locked into basketball at that moment, right, when you're really worried about your kid. Because, I mean, coaches love their kids. You saw Gino in tears at Paige Becker's final press conference. I mean, these are human beings who are invested in the lives of these people. So I think on that stage, it's just incredibly depressing and heartbreaking, but also knowing the fierce way that Juju is going to attack her recovery is the same way she attacked on the court by averaging almost 25 a game as a sophomore and just a savant, like you used that word, but I mean, she is a savant of the game and did it in a stoic, methodical, disruptive, and just lull you to sleep on roller skate way in terms of how she played the game. And you look up and she has 30. You know, you look up, she has a triple-double, 38, 8 blocks. Like, she was just on really a high level of elite execution. And that, for me, is also heartbreaking because I know she's going to get back to that. But, you know, as an athlete, to be in that kind of flow state in every aspect of the game, and then to have that just, you know, the light flicked off on that immediately, that's just gut-wrenching. And, you know, for me, I just have tears in my eyes, like, the whole time I'm talking about it right now, because I, you know, you just wish you could fix it, you know, quickly for her. And you know that she's going to have to go through a lot to get back to where she was, but I have no doubt that she will absolutely get back to that. Paige Beckers has done it. You've seen AZ Fudd go through injuries and come right back and go out there and just be an absolute menace in every way. So I have no question about that. But in this moment, like I said, you have to be where your feet are. Where my feet are right now, I'm incredibly sad. I went to sleep with a headache, woke up with a headache, just thinking about how she's managing. And I, you know, I just send her, you know, a lot of love and obviously fervent prayers and, you know, just constantly sending good juju. Sorry to say it that way, but I've been saying it when I called her games all year. Just sending all that good energy and light and love her way, because she's definitely going to need it. Obviously, uncharted territory for her, you know, physically and mentally to get through. But, you know, this time next year, we're going to be talking about how miraculous it is that, you know, she's been able to get back to who she has been for the game and who she's been for Juju.
No doubt about it. It's so beautifully well said. And she's someone who's shed a lot of light. Emanates a lot of light from within the sport. And to lose her and that light for however long she's out is certainly a loss. The way her teammates responded was incredible, by the way. What Kiki did last night is inspiring, and we'll see what USC can do for the rest of this tournament. Wishing Juju the best. Christy, always great to have you. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and everything, your emotion with us. I always appreciate having you, and I'll see you soon, my friend.
I appreciate you, Craig. Thank you so much. All love all the time.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate that. Christy Winter Scott with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, we will turn gears to football, much less emotional, not because football's not emotional. Got wild men out there yelling, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But we got a couple of really fun mailbag questions in our Take a Mail mailbag that only Logan can answer. And so we're going to share those answers with you next. And then coming up 6 o'clock, Robbie Hummel, men's basketball analyst for CBS. He was on the call for the Maryland games. We are going to let you hear my conversation that I had a little earlier today with him. And then Kevin Willard's conversation with Kevin Sheehan as well in the 6 o'clock hour here on the Team 980. It's Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. Always live as well on the Free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Take Command was a fun one today. Did a bunch of draft stuff. Talked about receiver. Talked about edge. But if you want to hear all that, you're going to have to listen to Take Command. It's a podcast. We can't play the whole thing on the radio for you. It'd be very lazy from us. I mean, I guess we could. Be very, very, very lazy from us. But we do play part of it for you because we want to make sure we have Logan on the show as often as possible. He's only the smartest guy talking about football in the whole darn city. And there was a couple of mailbag questions we got at the end of this week's episode that I thought were really fun and different and insightful, and I think you guys will enjoy. So we're going to play the end of today's Take Command for you. Again, if you want the full thing with a lot of the draft breakdown, then listen to the full episode from the beginning. Just do it after 7 o'clock once we're done. Also, schedule update. Toby Altizer is going to join us live for our annual edition, Anthony, of Is That Guy a Washington National? our official Nationals preview. Do we know the players on the team?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'm
sure.
Not.
I mean, I didn't say I'm going to do well, but I'm ready. So we're going to do that at 6 o'clock. That's when Toby can swing by. So once he's done over doing his job over at The Fan, we're going to have Toby, who's, of course, the co-host of Bustin' Loose Baseball, with us to play Is That Guy a Washington National? We will let you hear some of Kevin Willard's chat with Kevin Sheehan at 6:15, and then our conversation with Robbie Hummel we'll let you hear at 6:30. So Hummel, awesome stuff on the NCAA tournament at Maryland. I was able to tape that actually earlier today, so I can tell you, although he will not be joining us live, it's a real good chat. I know, because we already did it. Real things coming up at 6:45, but right now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the brains of Logan Paulson. We got two really fun questions to wrap up here on Take Command, Logan, and we're going to have to rely on your experience for both of these because I never played in the NFL. This one from Brian, a question for Logan. How much does the front office talk to players about other players? For the draft, a player from the same school, even if they never played together, might still have contacts and know inside intel. For free agency, it seems even more significant that a player would have great intel on a potential signing. And the ultimate version, how much do coaches, players talk to players about other players on the team when considering who to retain? Is there any etiquette about this sort of thing? You famously did your own draft evaluations. You ever have a GM ask you for them? But more importantly, on the intel front, I think that's really interesting because you want to use all your resources. You also don't want to put your players in a bad spot. So what's the etiquette and what from the player's side and how do front offices handle this?
So I think this is good. This is a good question. So what I will say is front offices, scouting departments, if they're good, they'll ask anybody anything. Like I remember, so like last year or this year even, I trained a couple tight ends for the draft, right? For example, and I don't know how they knew this, but someone from the scouting department stopped me the other day in the office and was like, "Hey, did you work with these guys?" And I said, "Yes." And he's like, "Can you give me the 411 on them?" And I said, "Yeah." And so here we go. So I don't know how they figured that out, but they asked me then. And then when I was playing, like they'd come up to you and be like, "Hey, did you play with so-and-so?" And I'd be like, "Oh yeah." And like, what do you think about him? And then you just kind of give the little rundown, like, and then they say, "Oh, well, how's he as a pro? Like, how's he as a worker?" I said, "Oh, I played with him when he was really young. He hadn't really figured it out yet, but really talented guy," or whatever I'd say. You know what I'm saying? And so I do think like they understand, like the conversations we have in here about prospects and character and all that stuff, they understand that at the highest level. Like they understand like how important that is. And they have a whole staff. Like I was talking to Dan Quinn. I did an interview with him the other day. And I didn't even think about this, but this is so true. Like the reason you have a regional scout is because you get a guy who watches a player, hopefully for 4 years, four consecutive years. I follow this guy's career. I talk to the coaches about him. I talk to the janitors about him. I know him really, really well, right? And I think that's ultimately what you're trying to do is just get every piece of information to help peel back the onion. Because quite frankly, like he might be different, the guy that they're talking about, he might be different with me than he was with a coach or when he's with the scout. And it's just a way to kind of get in behind the veil a little bit and understand who he is. And it's always a great like I was talking to somebody the other day, and it's always awesome when it's like, "Oh, what about this player?" A guy that I'm coaching, I was talking to him about a player that he played with in college. He's like, "Dude, the best competitor, the best dude." And you're just like, and he's not his agent. He's not, you know, he's like, they're not even really friends, but he's like, "Oh dude, I love practicing and competing against that guy." You're just like, yes. And I think that's ultimately what you're looking for. Just kind of that stamp of just like, okay, like we couldn't get in. Like I was talking to a scout the other day and he's like, "We couldn't get a lot of information from the school because of how they were handling scouts at the school." So I called his high school coach and his high school coach said X, Y, Z. And it just gave me enough to be like, okay, like it supports the film. It supports the character we've seen. And so that's they're looking for every possible edge and insight into that person. And I think that is ultimately what you want from a good scouting department is knowledge and familiarity.
So I actually do have something to contribute here because I'm a reporter, damn it. Or used to be. Now I just sit and give opinions all day. But like when you're a reporter, you have to understand your sources. And if I'm going, I'm not saying this is you, but if I'm going to Logan and he says every guy's the best, I probably am not putting a lot of stock in Logan's opinion on that in terms of the character. Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah, I loved him. And it's like, that guy? No one else has had a good thing to say. And then turns out that guy sucks. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to file that away and be like, I don't know that Logan is a reliable source. So you have to understand who you're talking to. So I would imagine front offices would trust a guy like actual Logan, not fake Logan that I just put out there. Actual Logan, who's going to be honest and, you know, really understands what it's like to be professional. Like if you're asking a guy who's a rookie and wasn't very professional in his rookie year about his college teammate, who's his best friend, like you got to understand the context there. And you know, the positives and the negatives of all of that. So I think that's the kind of funny thing about scouting when it comes to the non-tape stuff is like, you're actually becoming a reporter in a lot of ways.
Yes.
You're becoming, I mean,
an investigator.
Like
somebody, one of the scout I talked to at the combine was like, he characterized himself as like, I'm a detective.
And yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
We've seen like former intelligence officials go to front offices and like participate in interviews and stuff when they retire from insert your three letter agency here. Like, because those people are professionals, like the ultimate professionals at like understanding people. And that is an incredibly valuable skill to NFL teams. And so, yeah, I love the way you started that answer with like a good scouting department will talk to anyone about anything. But then it's how do you sort that information that becomes really valuable. So I think that's really interesting and definitely great to hear that teams do that. Like, but I'm also not putting the same stock in Bobby Wagner's opinion versus basically anybody else because he's Bobby Wagner, but right. I'm not going to single out anybody else. But like, if Bobby Wagner says that guy's a pro, I'm like, cool. I don't need to do no second sources needed. If some other folks say it, then I might be a little bit more wanting to do some more follow-up. Anything else on that before we get to the last question here?
I think this is the best. This is the biggest difference between like what we do, which is like tape evaluation, talent evaluation, and actual scouting. Like the juice is the real like sweet science of the draft and of free agency is determined in this part of the space. And I think it's really relevant because, you know, when our draft discussion, we talked about character, and in our free agency discussion earlier in the show, we talked about character, right? This is where the scouting department really makes their money. Like I had a conversation with a current offensive coordinator. And he was like, I don't need a scout to tell me if a guy can play football. I don't need a scout to tell me if a guy can be a fit anymore. Like it used to be the scouts had to watch film because of how they had to cut film. But now with like PFF, it's everything's a cut up. Everything's a hyperlink. We can get any information we want about a guy. It's fine. I need to know if the guy's a good dude. I need to know if the guy's wired right. And that's ultimately what the scouts need to do is be able to come to the coach and be like, this guy had this issue as his freshman year, but he figured it out. The coaches say he turned a corner and now he's become a team captain. Like I need that guy. That's what this is. And so like, this is where it's always, I feel somewhat disingenuous doing these talent evaluations because it's such a small piece of the actual puzzle. It's this other thing that really makes good fits for a team.
Right. And by the way, you know, the relationship element of this is enormous, right? If you go to a college coach and you might have that situation where they say all their players are awesome because they're trying to put guys in the league as high draft picks, which helps them in recruiting and now in the NIL portal and all that. But if you have a real relationship with someone, then they're going to be honest with you. And, you know, they might be like, hey, we had him. I don't know how this dude's going to do outside of our college structured program. Yeah. Like the freedom of the NFL might be a bad thing for him. And so right. You have to, the GMs, assistant GMs, scouts, like the relationships you develop with college head coaches, coordinators, position coaches, janitors, like you said, like all that stuff becomes really, really important. If there's a class that all the athletes take, I want to know the professor.
Right.
Like that's what intelligence gathering is in this space. And that stuff becomes enormously important. All right. Last one to wrap up. This was a really fun question that I'm actually very curious about how this changes team to team. Question for Tate Command. This was one that we were going to do with Chris and maybe eventually we'll get Gores on here and do the crossover episode. I assume that the players on last year's Commanders team got some direction on what they should be working on during the offseason. But when does that happen? The day after the season ended sounded rushed, so I don't imagine it was then. He says, I never miss a podcast. Love what you and Logan do. So, Alec, thank you very much. Appreciate the kind words. When do you get your offseason marching orders, and how specific are they?
So, yeah, I mean, usually it does happen the last day. And so what you do is you have a team meeting, and like it's like, hey, like real quick, you know, it's – like, hey, just so these are the dates we're thinking about generally coming back. Great job on the year. Make sure you check in with the strength conditioning staff. They'll give you the off-season pamphlet. Most guys don't use it. Like, they use it as a kind of a template, but like, they have their private coaches or they like to train a little bit differently. Like, I always would take the pamphlet, like read through it and be like, okay, this is generally what they want in terms of getting ready for coming back and kind of like the notes you want to hit. But I always wanted to kind of do some different stuff than what I did for 6 months or 8 months when I was on the team. So I would kind of train on my own, but that's where they give that to you. And then obviously you have your exit meeting with your coaches and that can be done in person or over the phone. And usually it's like kind of just a quick review of their high level thoughts of the year. So I would go check in with the special teams coach and my position coordinator, sometimes the offensive coordinator, depending on my relationship with them, and just be like, hey, like, you know, thanks for a great year, like things to take to the off season. And they'd kind of be like, you know, this, this, and this, or here's a positive thing that I really like about your game. We need to make sure we're better in this area. And so then I'd try to take that and go make sure I got better at it, you know, in the off season. And that was, sometimes those conversations were really hard and you're like, oh damn, like I'm in a lot of trouble here for next off season or whatever. But you know, like that's kind of when, and it is a little bit rushed, but it's not like this crazy formal thing. You pop into the office with the special teams coach and goes, hey, loved what you did here. You know, you're not great at covering kicks, but we can find a role for you in this other area and enjoy the off season. And it's like maybe 3 minutes. And you go to the position coach, a little bit longer, better relationship there. But that's basically what it looks like. And you have the pamphlet and get out of there.
What is there like a distinct one that stands out that you remember, good or bad, of a postseason meeting with a coach that set up an off season for you in a significant way?
Yeah. So the one that I remember is I remember having a meeting with a special teams coach and kind of coming in, and I thought like I had a pretty good year on teams, and he was just like, hey man, you know, love how you work, love how you prepare, but you had too many penalties this year. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. You know what I mean? So like then I had to kind of go back and rewatch some film and be like, how do I clean up some of this stuff? Like some of this stuff is just innate to my game and I'm kind of riding this risk, you know, like a lot of holding penalties or whatever it was. Like, that's just how I got to do that to a certain extent because I'm not the best athlete, but can I clean up some of this other stuff? And so some of it was snap count related. So I went home and kind of was like, really was like, well, how do I make sure that I own the snap count? And so kind of looking through the book, make sure I was familiar with the cadences. And then I realized like, sometimes I'm not getting the cadence because I'm thinking about other stuff. So kind of shifting that to the forefront, and that all was kind of an off season, you know, process. And it wasn't every day, but it was just something kind of like that touched on like once a week, once every other week, just to kind of make sure it was better. And it did get better, you know, like, which was good. But I'm just saying like, those are the types of conversations that I think are helpful for players. Cause you don't always get super honest feedback necessarily in season. Like yeah. You're thinking about other stuff. So like, it's just a nice, like little nugget here. Okay. I can go work on that.
Are those conversations different? Like for you, the first couple of years, you're on your rookie deal. And I know for you, your entire career, you always felt like you were teetering on the edge of the roster, right? No matter what, because you're an undrafted guy. But if you have, I guess if you were undrafted, did you have, how many multi-year deals did you sign?
So my rookie year, and then I signed a 3-year deal after that. So okay. Pretty much my whole time in Washington. Yeah.
So how different was it? Let's say the first year after you signed that 3-year deal, you know, you're coming back versus the years that you're a pending free agent. Cause they'll still talk to you. They'll still give you some stuff. But yeah. I imagine those might be a little bit different conversations.
Yeah. Much different actually, you know, like, cause when you're on the 3-year deal, you're kind of building with the team. Like you're part of, you know, long-term is a relative term here, but like, you know, maybe the next year plans, like you're going to be in for camp, like, and on the 1-year deal, like those conversations were, you'd come in and it'd be like, hey, you know, Logan, we'd love to sign you back. We love what you did this year. And that's more with the conversation. Very high level, very superficial.
They don't actually want to sign you.
Well, like, I mean, it depends. Like, so yeah. I had a conversation with the Bears and I had I think a really solid year with the Bears, very physical, kind of embodied what they wanted from a blocking wise standpoint. And the GM was like, dude, we'd love to have you back, like straight up. And I just think like they're coming off kind of an emotional year, right? So like in that moment, yeah, we want you back, right? But then they go do their reevaluations, they look at the positions, and they went out and signed like Deion Sims, who was this guy from Michigan State, who was big, a little bit more pass game upside at the Y spot. And that's, again, that's what my career was. Like you can always get a little bit better, and if you can, you should. And so I'm not like mad at them for that, but
yeah,
I do think things change as the offseason progresses. And that's how I felt in that conversation. So I didn't get like a ton of feedback from him in that moment, but I'm glad I went and checked in with him. Cause like, at least immediately. There was some, and again, like talking to my position coach, talking to head coach, everyone wants you back, but it's the off season process is long. You got to like reevaluate, reassess your needs as you get some distance from the event. And I think that's a good process. But again, like that's one of the reasons why those meetings at the end of the year on the 1 year deal feel a little bit less tactile, maybe.
Yeah. Last thing on this, because I think this is another fascinating thing, and my trainer brain goes a little bit on this one. Like, you get a piece of feedback. We need you to get a little quicker. We need you to get a little bit. That's one thing, right? Yeah. If it's like pure strength and conditioning, like, okay, I can go to my trainer and, or in your case, a guy who is well-versed in this stuff and ultimately now is a trainer yourself. Like, you probably knew how to do that. But when it's like, become a better route runner, like those types of things sound straightforward, but like actually doing them, I'd imagine is hard. Like, how do you become a better route runner? How do you eliminate penalties? I didn't want to try to commit penalties. I can't just like be like, oh, snap my fingers, I eliminated the penalties now. Like, how often do you get feedback? And really, you know, for, I think a lot of other players, you're again, very well versed and you would put in the homework and research, but like, how often do you think guys get feedback and they actually don't know how to act on it?
I think it's very often, you know, now that I'm coaching and I'm talking with, you know, about 10 NFL guys and they come to me with the feedback, right? And I think it's hard to, I think sometimes have a plan for how to get better in those areas. You know, like I need to be better on first down. My punch needs to be better if I'm a defensive lineman, or my back pedal needs to be better. I need this one was interesting. My tracking needs to be better. Like how I track the ball carry, how I track the ball in the air needs to be better. So as a coach, I'm like, that is something that he needs to be better at. But now how do I make sure that they are getting better at it? So I had to come up with, like, there's no tracking drills. So like, it's like, I need to get out there.
One.
Yeah. I need to get out there. I need to run and he needs to track me, or I need to get a ball. I need to throw it. And he needs to track the ball right off the bounce and make sure I'm taking good angles. And I got to evaluate the angle and give him feedback. Hey, you're a little loose there. Let's make sure we're tighter. Make sure we're attacking the backside hip. And just rep after rep after rep after rep. It's like getting a sparring partner, you know, and like that. And I think that's sometimes unfair. These meetings can be unfair because it's like, hey, we need you to be better at X, but there's no methodology to get there. And so they're kind of left in limbo about how to get that done. Like, and the other thing too, that used to bother me as a player, because you said the route running thing, is like, sometimes they've pigeonholed you as this player. And so the feedback reflects that player. But I don't want to be this player when I get back. I want to be a better version of myself. So I kind of wish people would have been like, hey, we need you to run better routes. You know what I mean? Like, and I wish that had been part of it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, they just were like, hey, Logan, we need you to clean up the holding penalties and become the best blocker in the league. And you're like, yeah, but if I can become a better route runner, then I probably would stop getting replaced by guys who are better route runners.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so like, I wish the feedback would reflect that, but they're not worried about you. They're worried about the team. And so I do think, in addition to the meetings being somewhat helpful, I do think it's important for athletes to kind of take back and do a self-scout, you know, like, hey, how can I don't be content. Like, I think there was a point in my career, probably year 5, 6, 7, where I was content being kind of this bulky blocking tight end. And it really hurt my career long term, right? So I'm always telling guys, like, think about, again, I was never going to be, you know, Kyle Pitts, but I could be the best version of Logan Paulson in that area and spent more time on that skill acquisition. And so I think that's something that I would say too, is like, the meeting doesn't reflect the best thing for you. It reflects the best thing for the team. So like, can you, again, think critically, think comprehensively about what your goals are long term. I think that's important too. And again, developing your own methodologies on how to improve and get better, I think, is incredibly important, but also very, very challenging.
Yeah. As a strength coach, I just think about reverse engineering results too. Like, if our goal is to do this, how do we create the drill? Whether it's with, like, you know, like, we have these things called blaze pods or fit lights. Yeah. There's another version. Like, can you use those little lights that light up different colors to simulate decision making? Can you, you know, you get a couple people out there and have, you know, a handoff versus play action drill of play recognition? Like, you have to ultimately practice the skill, which is hard because you're not going to recreate a full tackle football game. So it's not like in the NBA where guys get feedback and then they can go play pickup and they can work on their mid post game.
Great point.
Like, it's a totally different thing. So you have to try to create, like, isolate the skill that you're trying to work on and do it to the best of your abilities in a safe manner, where ultimately then, you know, best prepared for the regular season. It's tough. Football's one of the hardest to train in that way. Like, doing the speed, explosiveness, strength, power stuff, like, that's easy. That's We know how to do that.
But yeah, I've actually taken a lot of inspiration from how fighters train, you know, like, and yeah. how like rugby players train, because it's like they're similar. You can't just go do rugby. I can't just go fight. I need to like right. skill acquire.
What's our football sparring? I think that was a great way to put it. So, and it's also very, very different based off the position in terms of what you need. So it's a fun off-season's fun.
It's fun, and
maybe we can get Gores on to talk about some of the things that he's done with different guys over the years too. So maybe that'll be the fun follow-up to that question if we do that crossover episode.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.